Hey, good morning, y'all. It's good to be back. It's been a couple weeks I've been gone, but it's good to be back and see you guys again. It's weird that I was telling somebody this morning, I think this is the second time I preached this year, and then I was out of town for 2 weeks. 2020 has been a weird year. but look, hey, I'm filling in for Tim, and let's continue to be praying for Tim. He's just feeling sick, and we just want to pray that he recuperates, recovers, gets feeling better so that you guys don't have to listen to me or Lance again next week. Hey, so we're in this series called Rich Toward God, and it's a giving, tithing, stewardship, generosity series. And so what I wanted to do is I wanted to start off today talking about some of the things that I have seen happen over the last 14 years almost that I've been working here. And I want to start with one thing in particular. I want to go back about 10 years. We did this thing. Tim started off this year. He kicked it off with this big vision for taking up an offering for $30,000 to build a church building in India. And he wanted to do that over the course of this 1 year. And I remember at the beginning of the year thinking, wow, that's really cool. That's a really like bold vision, and it'll be awesome to see what God can do. Of course, over the course of that year, I started to get a little worried because month and month went by and there was not any money coming in towards this offering that Tim wanted to take up. And then I started to think well, what happens if we don't take up the $30,000? What happens if we're not able to build this church in India? And I remember it was like maybe September and we had like less than $1,000 had come in. And I started kind of asking Tim, what's going to happen, man? What are we going to do if we can't raise this money? And Tim was like, don't worry about it. It's going to be taken care of. And I was like, okay, but let's just pretend that maybe it won't. Tim just had confidence that this was something that God wanted done, and that he was gonna do it through our church. And so I want to say it was like October, and Tim said, you know what? These people in India that don't have a church building, they meet outside every Sunday morning when they come together for worship. So you know what we're gonna do one Sunday? We're gonna meet outside. And so Tim said, let's get a tent. We're going to put a tent out on the front lawn. And he said, let's bring the sound system out there. We'll set up a stage and put the band outside. And we had our worship service outside one morning in October. And I'll tell you, I'll never forget. Tim just had this confidence in him that it was going to work out. And in that one day, we took up like a $27,000 offering to build this church in India. And we were able to do it through God's help and God's provision and through the generosity of the people in our church. And that was the first time that I really just started to realize, okay, maybe there are things that God can accomplish together with his church that are outside of the scope of what I believe is possible. And so gradually, I feel like God has been just showing me over and over and over again that God can do more than I expect. A couple years back, I went with Campus Christian Fellowship on a Mexico missions trip. By the way, we're having another Mexico missions trip for our church this summer. If you're interested in going, it's not too late to get signed up, and it is an absolutely amazing experience. But a couple years ago, I was having this trip that I was trying to go on, and the cost of the trip is about $1,500, which, as international missions trips go, that's not bad. But $1,500 is still, it's not chump change. At least not for me. And so I remember I was just like, you know what, I'm going to post up on Facebook and just see if, any friends or family want to help out. And no lie, within a week or two, all the money had been raised for my trip. And what was cool was, some of it was like family members and relatives that were reaching out and wanting to support me on the trip. But there were also some friends, some people that, acquaintances, people that I've known throughout the years that I haven't spoken to in years. And they said, you know what? Actually, one of the guys in particular, a buddy of mine from up in Virginia, he actually had been a student in one of the ministries that I had served, and then he and I had been friends. He messaged me and said that he had been on a trip like this before, and he really, really loved it. And he was sad that he wasn't able to go again, but he wanted to be able to help me to go. And so it was just amazing for me to see all of a sudden that need was just taken care of, just like almost in an instant. You know, it makes me think about how there are things that like we can't do by ourselves, but when we partner together and we partner with God, these things become possible. I mean, I think about, one of the things I was thinking about was Compassion International. I know we got a lot of families in our church that support kids through Compassion International. And let me tell you, if it was not for the cumulative efforts of all the people involved in a ministry like that, like I wouldn't have the ability to support a kid in another country. None of us would have the ability to just do that. But because we come together and we work together, God can use our generosity and He can use a small gift to make a big difference in somebody's life. Backpack Pals has been another example of that. Many people in our church have sponsored kids. Many people in our church have donated food. And let me tell you, if it was not for all the gifts and all the sponsorships and all the food donations and all the things that have come in, like we would not have seen the growth that we've seen in that ministry. But let me tell you, when it started, it was just a few dozen kids over at Creekside. And now Backpack Pals is running around 150 kids at 7 different schools. Now that is beyond the scope of what we thought was possible when that ministry was started at Christ Church. But we've been able to see that through the power of God, that ministry has grown. And we hope that it's going to continue to grow. Because let me tell you, I think that need is great. I think that need in our community is great. And I think that God can continue to use that ministry in ways that we haven't even imagined of yet. And so that's really exciting to see how that ministry has grown. I do want to mention one other thing. We're having, this was in the announcements video this morning. We're having a meeting right after church today. Some of our volunteers went to the Next Level Conference down in Savannah, Georgia. My days and weeks are running together. Like the week before last, I think. I don't know. Last week? I can't remember. So we just recently went on this trip. And we got to hear about basically how their church has begun supporting the foster care system in their community. And some of our volunteers really caught a vision for how we can do that. And you know, at the end of the day, it's not always just about becoming a foster parent or adopting a kid or something like that. Honestly, anything that you're willing to do to help serve and show love to the people in this system is something that God can use. And the cumulative efforts when we all come together are amazing. And now this is just starting out, so we're having a meeting right after church today. If that's something you're interested in, you should stop by and check it out. Hey, where is it? Where is the meeting at? In the fellowship hall, right around back. Yep. So if you're interested, just check it out. Even if you're not sure about it, just go in and hear what they have to say. Because I believe that this could be the next thing that God has in store for our church. As something that He's going to be able to do more with than what we can even comprehend. Whatever we could come up with, God's got bigger plans than we do. And so if that's something you're interested in, that's something you can check out. But look, over and over and over again, I've seen this through the church. I've seen it on an individual basis. Becky and I have had people in the church who have blessed our family beyond what I could even describe to you. People who have just stepped up and taken care of us in our times of need. And what's been amazing is we've been able to then see opportunities where we can do the same for others. It's really been awesome to see that. When we see things like the Christmas program that we do to help families who are in need to do Christmas with their kids, we have families in the church to just step up and volunteer and say, I want to take care of that family. And it's just awesome to see the generosity. We got kids right now who are at the Carolina Christian Youth Convention, and they're there because someone in the church paid for them to go on this trip. And so it's just, it's amazing for me to see all that God can accomplish, and it's almost always more than what I expect, but what He can accomplish when He's partnered with generous, faithful people. And honestly, I think that this is God's plan. In fact, I think this has always been God's plan. I think it goes way back before the fall, before there was even sin in this world. God designed us. He made us with the intent of partnering with us to do good in the world. And I don't think that that's ever changed. I think that that was God's heart from the beginning, and I think it's still His heart today. And so when we give from our hearts to partner with God in the work that He's doing in the world, God notices and it pleases Him. When we give from our hearts to partner with God in the work that He's doing in the world, God notices and it pleases Him. You know, Paul, the Apostle Paul, he wrote the letter to the Philippian church from prison. Some people think that he was in prison in Rome. Other people think he was in Ephesus. But either way, the main reason for him writing this letter was in response to a generous gift that the Philippian church had sent to Paul while he was in prison. And so, he writes to them, encouraging them and building them up. And at the end of the letter, he thanks them for their support. He thanks them for their generous support, and he reminds them that their support was not just for Paul, but it's for the gospel itself, that they supported the work of the kingdom of heaven when they supported Paul. So towards the end of the letter in chapter 4, I'm going to start in verse 15. Paul wrote, "And you Philippians yourselves know that in the beginning of the gospel, when I left Macedonia, no church entered into partnership with me in giving and receiving, except you only. Even in Thessalonica, you sent me help for my needs once and again." You see, Paul is reminding the Philippian church that heaven takes notice as God's works are accomplished in this world. When God sees his works being done in this world, he notices it. And so when we give from generous hearts, right? We took up an offering earlier this morning, and unless you gave a designated gift this morning, your offering goes into our general fund. And when your offering goes into the general fund, that money goes to do a lot of things. And I've talked about this before at offering time. This is something I like to remind everyone of, because sometimes we don't think about where it's all going. But that money goes into ministry, directly and indirectly. You know, that money goes into the ministry budgets in our church to help our children's ministry buy curriculum and do the things that they're doing. It goes into our youth ministry budget to help them with it. It goes into the worship ministry budget so we can buy mic cables and pay for the licenses for the music that we use. There's so many, like, just totally random things that you probably would never even think of. And when you give to the general fund offering, that goes to help with the ministry that our church is trying to do. And not only just the ministry of our church, but it goes into helping missions all around the state and the country and the world. Our missions budget is around $70,000 right now. And every year, that's about how much money we give to support things like Mid-Atlantic Christian University and Campus Christian Fellowship, things like Togo Christian Mission, Tim just got back from, and Central India Christian Mission that I talked about earlier when we built the church for them. So when you give to the general fund offering, some of that money goes to help all of those different things. And even more specifically, it goes to help workers. You know, when you guys give to the general fund offering, like it pays for me and Tim and those of us who are working on the staff. It helps provide for us and our families so that we can give our attention and devote our lives and our focus to serving the church and building up the ministry of what's being done here. But even more than that, it goes to help those missions that we support. I mean, I think about Connie and Travis Taylor, who are leading the Campus Christian Fellowship Ministry at ECU, and we support them through our missions. And so when you give to the church, that money goes to support the work that's being done there. And let me tell you, I want to throw this out there for you to think about, all right? East Carolina University is a mission field. It's a mission field. In fact, I would say it's one of the single greatest mission fields in our community. It's right on our doorstep. And one of the ways that we support the work that's being done there is that we support Connie and Travis so that they can spend their lives out there working with college students and leading them to Jesus. And so, you know, it's awesome to see how when we support the ministry and the mission and the work of the church, all the different places that could go. But even more than that, I think at a really basic level, when we give from generous hearts, I believe that money actually goes towards transformation. It goes towards transformation of the people who receive, absolutely. The people who are in need, the people who don't know Jesus, the people who get to hear the gospel because of the money that we give to the church. But I believe that it also transforms the givers as well. Because I believe that our God has a generous heart. And I think that when we give, and we give generously, I think that God transforms our heart so that we become more generous. We become more like him. And so I really, really believe that when we give from generous hearts, that money goes to a lot of different things. As we see it go out and fund and support all of these things, all these works that the church is engaged in and that God is partnering with us in our local church, within our community, and out in the world around us. And so what are God's works? What are God's works that he does in the world? You know, 1 John 3:18 says, "Let us not love in word or talk, but in deed and in truth." And see, I believe that when God's love is spread, that it's spread practically. It's spread in practice. It's spread by doing things within the community of the church and into the world outside. Those deeds that are done, Those deeds are God's work in the world. And we partner with God when we do those things and when we support one another in doing those things. So then Paul goes on in verse 17 and he reminds the Philippians that God actually doesn't need their generosity to accomplish those works. In fact, neither does Paul. And this is really interesting here in verse 17. He says, "Not that I seek the gift, but I seek the fruit that increases to your credit." See, he's reminding the Philippians here of one of the teachings of Jesus. That heaven takes notice when we store up treasures in heaven. In the Sermon on the Mount in chapter 6, in Matthew chapter 6, Jesus said this. He said, "Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven where neither moth nor rust destroys and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I like the idea of storing up treasures in heaven. I like the idea of putting my time and my energy and my effort and my money into things that are going to last, things that are going to outlast me, things that are going to outlast this church, this community. So when faced with the opportunity to give generously to the work of God, I think that we ought to ask ourselves a few questions. I think the first question that we need to ask is, what do we have to lose? What do we have to lose? Does anybody know the answer? Yeah. But you know, I think we have to ask that question, because until we really think about it, I think we could worry about what we might have to lose. And then I think the next thing that we should ask ourselves is, what do we have to gain? Yeah. We have everything to gain. And then I think we need to ask ourselves, what do we have to give? And this is something that I think is important to note. I actually have not heard Tim's sermon and Lance's sermon from the last 2 weeks, so hopefully I'm not covering this again. But you know, Jesus talks about this woman who's given her offering, right? And her offering is so small, but what she's giving is everything that she has. And he points out that gift is even greater than the people, the rich people who can stroke the big check and make the huge donation, that it really is not about the amount, but it's about the heart behind it. And so I want to just say this. I really believe that when you ask yourself what you have to give, and you're really honest about it, and then you begin to give that, whatever that is, I believe that God is going to make you realize that you actually have more to give than you thought. And if you trust Him in a little bit, He's going to prove to you that you could trust Him in a lot. And so it's not about, you know, one of my favorite sayings that I heard someone say recently, and I've been applying this in almost every spiritual practice. I talked about this a few weeks ago when I talked about studying the Bible, and it's this: don't start where you think you should be, start where you are, okay? Start with a practical step that you can take, all right? If giving is something that you've never, ever done, then starting to tithe right now might prove difficult. And I'm not saying we shouldn't try difficult things. I'm not saying that we shouldn't challenge ourselves and step up. But what I am saying is, if you trust God with a little, He's going to prove that He's worthy of your trust. And so just take a step. Just take a step and ask yourself, what is it that you have to give? Because God is going to teach you just how much you have to give. And then I think the last question that we have to ask ourselves is, what in this life is of lasting value? What is of lasting value? I mean, I believe that lives who are transformed by the gospel, I think that's of lasting value. I think that when the kingdom grows and it spreads out, and like Jesus talks about a city on a hill, when the light of God and His love shines out into the darkest places in our communities and in our world, I believe that that is of lasting value. So then Paul continues on in verse 18 and he says, "I have received full payment and more. I am well supplied, having received from Epaphroditus the gifts you sent, a fragrant offering, a sacrifice acceptable and pleasing to God. And so Paul is reminding the Philippians here that heaven takes notice when our sacrifices rise up to God. Now, this language that he uses of their gift, their generous gift, being a fragrant offering, a sacrifice acceptable and pleasing to God. You know, Paul is calling back to the Old Testament, and he's calling back to the system of animal sacrifices that they would perform. Which, honestly, like when you think about it and you read about it, anyone who's been in the reading plan, we've been reading about animal sacrifices, it seems kind of brutal, okay? But I just want to throw this out there. Have any of you ever walked outside on like a beautiful, like late spring evening, and you can smell someone in your neighborhood is cooking out on the grill? See, it's not brutal when we think about it that way. But look, here's the truth. Like, I think that that's the imagery that God is pointing to here, and that Paul is pointing to here. That just like you could smell it, you know. And let me tell you, when I smell it, I'm like, man, where's my invite? Like, who didn't invite me over? Honestly, when I walk out and I smell someone cooking on the grill, it kind of just makes my heart happy that someone is grilling. Even if I'm not going to eat any of it, I'm just glad that someone out there is enjoying this. So, I think that this is kind of what we see here is this picture. In the Old Testament, when it talks about sacrifices, it talks about the smoke from the sacrifices rising up into heaven. And that God receives those sacrifices as a pleasing aroma, as a fragrant offering, right? And so I think that this is what Paul is latching onto. And he's saying that that's how God receives our offerings and our sacrifices. It's not that he needs them, but he sure does love them. And so then in verse 19, Paul reminds them that though he has worked through their generosity, it is God who has provided for his needs, and it's God who will provide for their needs. In verse 19, he says, "And my God will supply every need of yours according to his riches in glory in Christ Jesus." Now, I want you to think about this. What does it mean to trust in God's provision? We really, really do live, I think, in a time and an age where so many of us would describe ourselves as being self-sufficient. Like, I don't need help from anybody. I just take care of myself. I meet my own needs, right? I stand on my own two feet. But I think it's important for us to understand that as hard as we work, and I'm not saying that we don't have a lot of people out here who have worked really hard to have the life that they have. As hard as we work, ultimately, it's God who provides. It's God who sustains us. And we can be sure that the God who made us knows what we need. He knows what we need, and he has more than enough. He's made a world that's not merely adequate for our survival. It is bountiful beyond our needs. You know, scarcity is not a problem when the God that you worship owns the cattle on 1,000 hills, right? So we're motivated often by worry and fear and lack and scarcity. But the truth is that our God takes care of us and provides for us. I mean, Jesus said, like, think about the flowers in the field. Think about the birds of the sky. God takes care of them. How much more so is he going to take care of us? Sometimes that's not how it feels, though, if I'm just being completely honest. Sometimes it does not feel like God is taking care of everything. Sometimes I worry about what's going to happen tomorrow. And I know that you guys are with me in that. I know that you experience that fear sometimes. And it may seem, in those low times, in those hard times, it may seem that God is holding out on us. Or maybe he's mad at us. Or maybe he doesn't care. But sometimes I think what we need is actually a new perspective. And it's at times like this that I believe that God will define for us what we need. I'm telling you, I believe that God will provide us with everything we need, not everything we think we need. God will provide us with the things that we need. So I want to reread our passage this morning, but I'm going to back up just a little bit because I want to give you some more context. See, remember, Paul wrote this letter to the Philippians from prison. So I'm going to back up to verse 10. And Paul says, "I rejoiced in the Lord greatly that now at length you have revived your concern for me. You were indeed concerned for me, but you had no opportunity. Now that I am speaking, not that I am speaking of being in need, for I have learned in whatever situation I am to be content. I know how to be brought low and how to abound. In any and every circumstance, I have learned the secret of facing plenty and hunger, abundance and need. I can do all things through him who strengthens me. Yet it was kind of you to share with my trouble. And you Philippians yourselves know that in the beginning of the gospel, when I left Macedonia, no church entered into partnership with me in giving and receiving, except only you. Even in Thessalonica, you sent me help for my needs once and again. Not that I seek the gift, but I seek the fruit that increases to your credit. I have received full payment and more. I am well supplied, having received from Epaphroditus the gift you sent, a fragrant offering, a sacrifice acceptable and pleasing to God. And my God will supply every need of yours according to his riches and glory in Christ Jesus. To our God and Father be glory forever and ever. Amen." I think what we see here is a picture of Paul, even in prison, unsure of his future. He doesn't know if he's going to ever get out of prison. He has no idea what the future holds for him. But Paul was confident. And in our difficult times, I think we can also be confident. We can be confident that God will be with us in our need. And the God who partners with us is with us through thick and thin. God is not just with us when things are going great. He's with us when things are not going so great. And honestly, it's all because God loves us so much. And God is never going to withhold his love from us. You see, it's not really out of our wallets and our bank accounts that we give. And it's not out of our busy schedules that we give our time. Ultimately, when we give from our hearts. And those hearts are filled up and sustained by God's love. You know, remember that John wrote that we should love in deed and in truth. And when we give generously and sacrificially from our hearts, more than just money, we're giving love. We're giving the love that God has given to us, and we're giving it to others. We're spreading that love around inside the community of believers here. How many times do we read Jesus and the apostles telling the brothers and sisters within the church to love one another, to take care of one another, to bear one another's burdens? And then we spread that love out into the world outside the community of this church. Like that city on a hill. People get to see the light of God's love in the way that we treat others. In the way that we love our neighbors. In the way that we love our enemies. In the way that we love the people that we come in contact with. But all of that love, if it's just, you know, if it's just lip service, if it's all hypothetical and none of it is practical, I don't think that that's the kind of love that God is calling us to. He's calling us to put this love into practice. You know, John also wrote that when we love because God loved us first. That's our source. It's not our wallets. It's not our bank accounts. It's not your paycheck or your boss or your company or the government, whoever you work for. It's not the business that you own. That is not your source. I want to have a prayer for you guys this morning, and then we're getting close to wrapping up. Let's go to God in prayer. God, we thank you so much for your love and your generosity. God, I pray that everyone in here this morning would come to know that love, would come to experience that love in practical ways in their lives. And God, I pray that that experience of your love and your generosity and your provision would grow the faith of the people in our congregation to become more and more trusting of you and more attentive to the works that you have for us to do in this world. And God, I pray that if we give, when we give, we would give from hearts that have been transformed by your generosity into hearts that are generous just like you. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen. So this morning, as we get ready to wrap up, I want to invite you to know and experience the love of God. And that love plays out practically in our lives as God generously provides for us in every circumstance, in the good times and in the bad. Right? This is not a health and wealth gospel. God does not promise that things are always going to be great, but he does promise that he's going to be with us and he's going to provide for our needs. So I want to invite you to experience the love of God. And you can know about the love of God. You can intellectually understand it to a small degree. But to truly know God's love, which Paul writes in Ephesians chapter 3 and says that it surpasses knowledge. To know God's love that surpasses knowledge, you have to experience it. And so God invites you this morning, I'm inviting you this morning to experience his love, not only by receiving, but by partnering with God and giving. In 1 John chapter 1, verse 3, this is one verse that's just been stuck in my mind, and I just love what it talks about here. He says, "That which we have seen and heard, we proclaim also to you, so that you too may have fellowship with us. And indeed, our fellowship is with the Father and with his Son, Jesus Christ." And that word fellowship is translated from the Greek word koinonia. I think I've probably talked about that before in here. But fellowship is a word that I heard a lot growing up. You know, we had once a month, we had a fellowship meal potluck, and we would eat that meal in the fellowship hall. And my home church had a men's fellowship ministry and a women's fellowship ministry. And it was just a word that I heard a lot. And honestly, as a kid, just by observation, I basically kind of grew up to think that fellowship means hanging out and eating a lot of food. And you know what? That's a good time. I'm not knocking that at all, okay? But I want you to understand that fellowship is so much more than that. See, I didn't understand that fellowship is actually the context of unity in the church, and it is the context of communion with God. We have unity together as people who may otherwise not have a whole lot in common, but we have unity together, and we have communion with God through fellowship. And when we come together in fellowship with God, with one another, we have a shared purpose. We have a shared investment. We are both invested. We are all invested in the kingdom, in the work that God is doing. Fellowship is partnership. It's partnership with God and with one another. And our generosity, the sacrificial offering of our time and our money, but more than that, not just time and money, Jesus said the greatest commandment is to love the Lord your God with all of your heart, soul, mind, and strength. When you love your God with all of your heart, your soul, your mind, and your strength, that generosity ought to come from a place of fellowship. A fellowship of unity with one another and communion with God. And I believe that when we give out of generous hearts, trusting in God's provision, when we give of ourselves sacrificially, that is one of the greatest ways that God transforms us into people who are more like him. People who have the same heart that he does. People who look out and see the world the way that he sees it. They look out and they see not all the things that are wrong and all the things that could go wrong and all of the bad people and all of the violence and all of the instability and everything that we can look out at this, and we see the world and we see everything that's bad, but instead we look out and we see the world and everything that God is doing in the world. And so this morning we're going to sing this song. And this song is talking about God being the generous giver. And I think like in so many areas of our lives, in order for us to live into the way that God made us to live, we just have to look to His example. When we can look to God's example as the generous giver, He can teach us how to be generous. And He'll meet us where we're at. But He's going to lead us to a better place. And so y'all stand up and we're going to sing this song together this morning.